Dexter in the Dark marks a pivotal turning point in Jeff Lindsay's acclaimed series, diving deeper into the supernatural origins of Dexter's Dark Passenger than ever before. This third installment, published in 2007, quickly became a cultural phenomenon, influencing the hit Showtime series and cementing Lindsay's reputation as a master of psychological horror. Stephen King called it a macabre masterpiece, while the New York Times praised its wickedly playful narrative voice. The book's exploration of ancient evil resonated with readers worldwide, selling over 2 million copies and appearing on bestseller lists in 17 countries. What makes this particular installment so compelling is how it forces our favorite serial killer to confront something he's never experienced before, genuine fear. Dexter Morgan masterfully orchestrates a complex double life that would impress even the most skilled method actor. During daylight hours, he inhabits the role of a respected forensics expert at Miami Metro Police Department, analyzing blood spatter patterns with scientific precision. He presents himself as the perfect fiancé to Rita Bennett, a caring, attentive partner who appears to have overcome her traumatic past relationships. His performance extends to being an increasingly involved father figure to her children, Cody and Aster, attending school events and helping with homework with seemingly genuine enthusiasm. But as darkness falls, Dexter transforms into something else entirely, a methodical predator who hunts other killers with surgical precision. This darker incarnation operates under a strict moral framework, the Code of Harry, developed by his adoptive father during Dexter's formative years. Harry, a veteran police officer, recognized young Dexter's homicidal tendencies early and, rather than attempting to suppress them, channeled them toward what he considered a socially beneficial outcome, the elimination of murderers who escaped justice through legal loopholes. What distinguishes Dexter's psychological makeup is his relationship with what he calls his dark passenger, an internal presence he experiences as separate from his conscious self. This isn't merely a poetic metaphor for his murderous impulses. Dexter perceives it as a distinct entity that whispers guidance, demands satisfaction, and serves as both companion and tormentor. The dark passenger becomes particularly active when Dexter identifies potential prey, almost humming with anticipation like a tuning fork resonating with its perfect frequency. His relationship with Rita's children takes an unexpected turn when he recognizes familiar shadows in their eyes. Both Cody and Aster, having endured systematic abuse from their biological father, exhibit early signs of developing their own dark passengers, a development that both concerns and intrigues Dexter. Rather than recoiling from these emerging darknesses within them, he finds himself contemplating a role he never expected, becoming their guide through the shadows, just as Harry was for him. When the children approach him with their coded request to play kick the can, their innocent-sounding euphemism for learning his lethal craft, Dexter faces a profound choice about perpetuating Harry's legacy. Meanwhile, Dexter meticulously tracks Alexander Xander McCauley, a target who perfectly fits his code. Xander, a trust fund hippie whose public persona centers around charitable works, uses this benevolent facade to lure homeless individuals with promises of food and shelter before murdering them. Through weeks of careful surveillance, Dexter documents Xander's pattern of disposing of bodies from his luxury yacht, Peace and Love. Dexter begins preparing for what he calls a moonlight cruise, his characteristically ironic term for a final confrontation. This hunt represents the comfortable rhythm of Dexter's carefully ordered world, a rhythm that's about to be dramatically disrupted by forces beyond his control. Dexter's carefully ordered world begins to unravel when he's called to investigate a bizarre crime scene at the University of Miami. Two charred bodies have been discovered, their heads replaced with ceramic bull heads. What truly disturbs Dexter isn't the gruesome display, but his unprecedented reaction to it. His dark passenger, the constant companion that has guided his predatory instincts since childhood, retreats in terror, leaving him alone for the first time. This abandonment throws Dexter into crisis. Without his dark passenger, he feels vulnerable and incomplete. "I was a piano with a missing key, a clock with a broken gear," he reflects. The experience forces him to question the very nature of his shadow companion. Is it merely a psychological construct he created to cope with his true nature, or something more? This existential crisis becomes the central tension of the narrative. The investigation leads to Professor Jerry Halpern, who faints when questioned about missing student Ariel Goldman. Despite overwhelming evidence against him, blood-spattered clothing and a bloody fingerprint in his car, Halpern appears genuinely confused. During questioning, he describes a disturbing dream about a massive statue with a bull's head and fire in its belly, where he placed the murdered girls. This detail, coupled with Halpern's history of blackouts, suggests something more complex than simple guilt. As more bodies appear, all burned and beheaded, patterns emerge connecting them to an ancient deity named Moloch, who demanded human sacrifices burned inside a bronze bull statue. The ritual murders are accompanied by hypnotic music that seems to affect Dexter in profound ways, occasionally breaking through his consciousness and filling him with uncharacteristic joy. This music represents something ancient and powerful that can override even Dexter's carefully constructed self-control. The novel opens with a startling prologue describing an ancient entity, referred to simply as It, that has existed since the dawn of time. This being watched life evolve with growing frustration until discovering it could possess living creatures. When early humans appeared with their capacity for deception and violence, it laughed for the first time and realized, "I can work with this." As Dexter investigates the ritual murders, he begins to understand that his dark passenger might be more than a psychological construct. It could be a supernatural entity that has attached itself to him. Through research, he discovers symbols at the crime scenes matching Aramaic letters spelling Molech, Moloch, the detestable god of the Ammonites mentioned in biblical accounts of King Solomon. The historical Moloch was worshipped through human sacrifice, particularly of children. The ritual involved placing victims into a massive bronze statue with a bull's head and a furnace inside. As the victims burned, priests would play drums and music so loud it would drown out the screams, inducing an ecstatic trance in worshippers. This exact ritual begins appearing in Dexter's dreams, accompanied by feelings of supernatural joy. What makes this revelation so disturbing for Dexter is the implication that his entire identity, his dark urges, his predatory nature, might not be his own, but rather the influence of an ancient supernatural parasite. "Had I ever been anything more than a convenient host for this ancient entity?" he wonders. This existential crisis forces Dexter to confront what remains of his humanity when the darkness that defined him retreats. As Dexter struggles with his dark passenger's absence, he begins experiencing something entirely new, raw, primal fear. This unfamiliar emotion manifests physically, cold sweats, racing heart, hypervigilance, sensations that had previously been foreign to his carefully controlled existence. He notices a white Toyota Avalon following him through Miami's busy streets, feels watched while examining crime scenes, and detects subtle disturbances at Rita's house during the night. Displaced garden furniture, partially opened windows, footprints in the dewy grass. Without his passenger's guidance, these threats leave him uncharacteristically vulnerable, forcing him to rely solely on his human instincts rather than his supernatural companion's insights. The stalker is revealed to be Dr. Darius Starzak, a religious philosophy professor whose academic credentials mask a sinister involvement with human trafficking and an illegal cult. Starzak's expertise in ancient Mesopotamian religions and ritual sacrifices initially seems purely academic, until Dexter uncovers financial transactions linking him to missing persons cases across Florida. When Dexter pursues the Avalon after spotting it watching his house, the chase leads through Miami's maze-like streets, ending dramatically at the canal, where Starzak abandons his sinking vehicle and disappears into the murky water. This confrontation marks a turning point. Dexter is no longer merely investigating ritual murders. He's become a target himself, thrust into unfamiliar territory as prey rather than predator. The situation escalates when Dexter discovers Starzak's connection to Professor Wilkins at the university. Both men belong to a Moloch-worshipping cult that has been performing ritual sacrifices throughout Miami. Their victims chosen according to ancient Babylonian texts. The cult's influence runs deep within the city's academic and religious communities, with members in positions of power and influence. When Cody and Aster encounter a mysterious man outside their school, a man who recognizes what he calls Cody's inside shadow, and gives them a business card bearing the Moloch symbol, Dexter realizes his family has been drawn into this dangerous web. The hunter-hunted dynamic reaches its climax when Cody and Aster vanish from Rita's carefully tended backyard, leaving only scattered toys and an ominous symbol drawn in chalk on the patio. Dexter immediately connects all the pieces, the surveillance cars, the nighttime intrusions, the frightening stranger who recognized something dark in Cody that mirrors Dexter's own nature. As Rita's hysteria builds to a fever pitch, Dexter hears the mysterious music again, this time louder and more insistent than ever. The haunting melody seems to pull at something deep within him, promising answers about both his missing dark passenger and his kidnapped stepchildren. Despite his better judgment and years of careful self-preservation, he follows the sound to a waiting car in the shadows. The last thing he sees before losing consciousness is a familiar symbol etched into a medallion hanging from the rearview mirror. One of the novel's most compelling elements is Dexter's evolving relationship with Cody and Aster. Having recognized their budding dark passengers, he takes on the role of mentor, teaching them the Harry way, the code his adoptive father taught him to channel his dark urges while avoiding detection. When Rita catches the children torturing a cat, Dexter seizes the opportunity for what he calls dark discipline. He explains that their first mistake was getting caught. We are supposed to be people, not piranhas. But the idea is the same, to look like something you're not. This lesson in maintaining appearances becomes a central theme of their relationship. Later, Dexter takes the children to his forensics lab for what Rita believes is a scared straight intervention. Instead, he shows them how microscopic evidence reveals everything. Cat hair, carpet fibers, even traces of pizza in Cody's clean shoe. All this from a clean shoe, he tells them? Think what we can figure out if we use all the fancy stuff. The lesson is clear. Even the smallest mistakes can lead to capture. This mentorship takes on new significance when the children are kidnapped by the Moloch cult. When Dexter rescues them from the island where they're being held for sacrifice, Cody proves he's been paying attention. As the cult leader threatens to throw Aster into the fire unless Dexter drops his gun, Cody stabs the man in the back, calmly telling Dexter, "Told you I was ready." This moment represents both Dexter's success as a mentor and the disturbing reality that he's passing his darkness to a new generation. Throughout the novel, Dexter grapples with fundamental questions about his nature that shake the very foundation of his identity. Without his dark passenger, the internal force that has guided his murderous impulses for decades, is he still a monster? Was he ever truly a monster at all, or merely a vessel for something ancient and evil? These questions force him to confront the unsettling possibility that his entire identity has been built around an entity that isn't actually part of him, but rather something that chose him as a temporary host. At the Miami Museum of Science, Dexter uses the Piranha exhibit as a profound teaching moment for Cody and Aster, drawing on his expertise in predatory behavior. He explains that truly dangerous creatures shouldn't look ferocious, They should blend in and appear utterly normal to avoid detection. The piranhas, with their unremarkable appearance until the moment they strike, serve as a perfect metaphor. This lesson about camouflage reflects Dexter's own carefully constructed persona, the mask of normality he wears to hide his true nature. His pressed shirts, suburban lifestyle, and role as a forensics expert represent layers of protective coloration that have allowed him to hunt undetected for years. The visit to the lion exhibit provides another crucial moment of insight. Dexter points out how male lions kill cubs when taking over a pride, a seemingly cruel act that follows nature's brutal logic. This observation leads to a startling insight. Perhaps something has scared away his dark passenger, like a new predator threatening it. This idea suggests a complex hierarchy of predators in the supernatural world, with Moloch representing something even more ancient and terrible than Dexter's own darkness. The implications terrify him. If his dark passenger can be frightened away, what kind of entity could possess such power? When Dexter finally confronts the cult leaders on Turoki, he experiences a transformation that challenges everything he thought he knew about himself. For the first time, he feels genuine rage, not the cold, calculated violence of his usual kills, but hot, human anger at being treated as a negligible thing. This emotional response represents a profound connection to his humanity that exists independent of the dark passenger. The revelation suggests that even without his supernatural companion, something dark remains within him, something perhaps more authentically human than he's ever wanted to acknowledge. This moment forces him to consider whether his monstrous nature was ever truly separate from his humanity, or if the dark passenger merely gave form to something that was already there. As the novel reaches its dramatic conclusion, Dexter finds himself at the altar on his wedding day, a moment that should be joyous, but instead fills him with a profound emptiness due to the absence of his dark passenger. Standing there in his perfectly pressed tuxedo, watching Rita and the children make their way down the aisle, he's struck by an overwhelming vision of his colorless future stretching endlessly before him. The prospect of PTA meetings, mortgages, and suburban banality looms like a suffocating cloud. Each mundane detail a reminder of the primal excitement he's lost. The pain of this realization becomes what Lindsay describes as exquisite torture, a phrase that perfectly captures the complex agony of Dexter's situation. Without his dark companion, every moment feels hollow, every smile forced, every gesture mechanical. The weight of impending normalcy bears down on him with crushing force, highlighting just how deeply he's come to depend on his supernatural partner for meaning, purpose, and his very sense of self. The turning point arrives with breathtaking suddenness. Just as Dexter is mentally resigning himself to an existence of empty ritual and forced conformity, something shifts in the atmosphere. Young Cody, showing his developing sensitivity to the darker forces that shape their world, reaches Dexter's side and whispers the transformative words, "Your shadow, it's back." The moment is electric. Dexter closes his eyes and experiences the familiar, almost comforting sensation of his passenger's return, marked by that distinctive dark chuckle that has guided him through so many nights of righteous violence. During the ceremony itself, Dexter's genuine smile, rare and real, spreads across his face, not because of his marriage to Rita or the conventional happiness it represents, but because he's finally returned to his true nature. He stands there, outwardly playing the role of devoted husband, while inwardly rejoicing in his restoration as Dexter the Avenger, ready to hunt again. The duality of this moment perfectly encapsulates his character, the mask of normalcy concealing the predator beneath. The return of the dark passenger raises intriguing questions about the nature of these supernatural entities. The text suggests that the passenger wasn't simply frightened away by Moloch, but was perhaps temporarily absorbed or consumed by the more ancient and powerful entity. With the destruction of Moloch's cult, the passenger breaks free and returns to its preferred host, Dexter. This interpretation gains weight in the novel's haunting epilogue, where it, whether Moloch or some other primordial force, watches and waits patiently above Miami's glittering skyline. The final lines reveal that this entity has done this countless times before and will do so again eternally, suggesting an endless cycle of supernatural influence over human affairs that extends far beyond Dexter's personal story. Throughout the novel, Dexter maintains what he calls his mask of normalcy, the carefully constructed persona that allows him to blend seamlessly into Miami society. His engagement to Rita, his methodical interactions with colleagues at Miami Metro, and even his detailed preparations for the wedding all serve as intricate camouflage for his true nature. "I find comfort in the camouflage," he admits early in the story, revealing how this fabricated identity has become both shield and shelter. This performance extends to every aspect of his life, from his cheerful morning greetings at the precinct to his calculated shows of emotion at crime scenes. This theme of hidden identities extends far beyond Dexter himself to broader questions about appearance versus reality. Professor Halpern presents a compelling case study. Despite overwhelming physical evidence pointing to his guilt, including blood spatter patterns that Dexter himself analyzes, the professor's genuine confusion and bewilderment suggest a more complex truth. Kurt Wagner undergoes multiple transformations in others' perceptions, shifting from grieving boyfriend to suspicious person of interest to eventual victim, demonstrating how easily surface appearances can deceive. Even the ancient entity IT must operate through human hosts, wearing their identities like elaborate costumes, suggesting that all identity might be a form of performance and authenticity. The wedding preparations serve as a sophisticated running metaphor for this theme of manufactured normalcy. Dexter finds himself increasingly entangled in discussions about Parisian honeymoon destinations, seating arrangements, and exhaustive negotiations with the temperamental celebrity caterer Manny Bork. These mundane concerns occur simultaneously with his investigation of ritual murders and his existential questioning about the nature of his own being. The parallel tracks of his life, the ordinary and the extraordinary, become increasingly difficult to maintain. What started as simple camouflage begins to feel like an elaborate prison, particularly as his dark passenger remains disconcertingly absent. When the passenger finally returns during the wedding ceremony itself, Dexter experiences a moment of perfect synthesis. His mask of normalcy achieves its ultimate form through marriage, while his true self resurfaces beneath the carefully maintained facade. This resolution suggests that identity isn't simply a matter of truth versus deception, but rather a complex interweaving of multiple layers. The genuine and the artificial become so thoroughly entangled that they create something entirely new, a hybrid identity that's neither completely false nor entirely true. Through Dexter's journey, the novel suggests that perhaps all identities contain elements of both performance and authenticity, existing in a state of perpetual tension and balance. The novel ends with a chilling epilogue. Far above the city, IT watches and waits patiently. It has done this countless times before and will do so again eternally. This suggests that while Dexter has temporarily triumphed over Moloch's cult, the ancient entity itself remains, waiting for new opportunities to gather followers and experience the rightness of their pain. This cyclical view of evil provides context for Dexter's own darkness. If his dark passenger is indeed a supernatural entity similar to, but distinct from Moloch, then Dexter represents just one instance in an eternal pattern of possession and influence. His mentorship of Cody and Aster continues this cycle, passing the darkness to a new generation who will carry it forward. Yet there's also a suggestion that humanity itself contains the capacity for darkness independent of supernatural influence. Dexter's moment of genuine rage when confronting his captors, his protective instinct toward Cody and Aster, and his ultimate triumph over the cult all occur without his dark passenger's guidance. This implies that while ancient entities may amplify human darkness, they didn't create it. They merely, as IT realized at the dawn of humanity, can work with this. In the end, Dexter in the Dark leaves us with disturbing questions about the nature of evil. Is it something external that possesses us, or something inherent that merely needs awakening? As Dexter returns to his dark rituals with his passenger restored, the answer seems to be both, a dance between human capacity and supernatural influence that continues eternally, with each generation teaching the next how to hear the music.